Welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections from the Catholic Community at Stanford University. These are a series of podcasts of Sunday homilies, reflections, and occasional talks given by the staff of the Catholic Community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Nathan Castle, OP Pastor Director of the Catholic Community. It is the 28th Sunday of Ordinary Time. The readings are from Cycle A.
Doesn't that sound like a strange story? The parables always have some sort of odd twist to them. They're not intended to go in one ear and out the other. They have some kind of tangle in the middle of them that brings that. It sticks in you and makes you go, huh? What? This one, it takes a little contextualizing. For one thing, for us, we're at the beginning of a new cycle, it's the beginning of the fall quarter, and we're all thinking about new things. But in the lectionary cycle of the church, it kind of parallels the seasons, and it's beginning to get cooler. And the trees are beginning to turn, and the days are getting a little shorter every day. And we're beginning to move toward the death of winter. The lectionary kind of parallels that. We've been reading Matthew's Gospel all the way since last December. And now it's 28 chapters long, and we're in chapter 22. Something happened a chapter ago that's really important. It's the scene that we kind of liturgically recreate on Palm Sunday. So think Palm Sunday. It's jubilant, but if you really get what's going on that day, Jesus rides into this city like this kind of conquering hero. People saw important people riding to Jerusalem with some kind of regularity. And usually they were conquering Romans on impressive steeds. Large horses, powerful. And they'd have all the regalia of a Roman soldier. And if they were really important, the most important people would have been told about their pending arrival. And at the gates would be, you know, all the important people in the city. And there'd be this display of welcoming some Roman. So what's Jesus do when he enters into this holy city? He borrows somebody's donkey. And not just a donkey, but a baby donkey. He's doing this on purpose. It's street theater. It's protest. He's coming into the holy city on a baby donkey. Who knows that he's arriving and he's there to greet him? All the least important people in the temple, the poorest people, the neglected people, the outcasts. And they have this spectacle. Think of the next Palm Sunday when you have your palm. That what you're doing is you're representing, you're recreating this street theater that Jesus created to be exactly the opposite of what the Romans did and what people were used to seeing. Now, the city, Jerusalem, had this huge temple complex in it. And frankly, the city's whole economy depended upon it. Think of like a state capital in our country that's a small town. There are a number of them around the country. A state capital that's a small town. The whole economy of the town is built upon state government. Everybody, regardless of what they do for a living, is dependent upon that one industry. That's the way Jerusalem operated. Everything that happened commercially in the city, it's the largest city in the nation, and the holy city of the nation. But everything commercial ran through there. So what does Jesus do after he rides into town on that little donkey? He goes right to the temple and begins to backs right into Paul's speech. He goes right to the heart of the money. And he goes in there and he just goes nuts. He throws the tables over. You can think of that, the ducks flying off and the clams out of the pages and spit them because he's just upset everything. He acts like he owns the place. And he says, Scripture says, this is my father's house, it's a house of prayer, but you turn it into a den of thieves. Well, not too long after that, the people who run the place want to talk to Jesus. They want a meeting with this guy, and they want to find out what his business is. Who do you think you are? And he's in that conversation with them now, this gospel is coming. And he's talking to the scribes and the Pharisees who run the temple. And then he decides to tell them a story about a king whose son was getting married, and this king was going to throw this feast. So that sets us up where we are. The first reading that you read was from the prophet Isaiah, wasn't it? And I prefer Isaiah's part. It's just, and think of people who hardly ever had a full belly. The feast that you described, rich, juicy meats, and fine aged wines, and more of it, and all of it that you can hold, and it's free, and it's just this wonderful image. Well, in Jesus' story, he's hearkening to that tradition of kind of the kingdom of God overflowing with all that you could imagine. And you're invited and included. And then this kind of sets it up that it's not a wedding. You hear that first he invites the people you would expect him to invite, his peers. Whoever was the king in the king's circle of friends. He invites them, and they don't even bother to reply. Not at all. I did some reading on it, and I found that that was a kind of common custom in Israel at that time. But these people wanted to wait and see if they could find out who else was coming to decide whether they were going to attend or not. Is that odd? Or maybe not so odd. You ever gotten an e-bite and gone down the list of who's checked it off? And it allows this e-biter and all the other ones like it. Don't they all have an option where, in addition to saying yes or no, you can also say no, and here's why. In the story, it says, one guy says, well, I've got a farm to take care of. The other one knows something's going on in my business. There's stuff going on at work. We can't come. The story goes a little bit further. This is on the second try when he sends out the servants. So the servants issue the invitation the second time. We get this, can't come, can't make it, so sorry. And then it says, and then they abused the servants and killed them. Now, may I say a show of hands? How many have done that? How many have said, I am certain that I'm coming to your party, and furthermore, I'm going to kill you for having invited me? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's way worse than deleting the email. Then it says, he comes to the next set of servants. How would you like? How would you like to be that servant? After the last one's got killed, now it's your job to go extend the invitation just one more time. Except this time, I want you to go and invite anybody you can find. Go out into the roads and gather up anybody that you can find. Matthew's gospel. His reader, us, ourselves of that third time. Because we're it. We're the anybody you can find. We're the ragamuffins. We're the dirt poor. We're the scum. We're the ones that nobody wants to have around. And suddenly we're invited to the feast. So why couldn't we come? And of course we do, and the place is full. Things are sounding good. The banquet hall is full. The king's going to be really happy about that. And then he walks in and sees me. What do you think you're doing coming in here dressed like that? Okay, you had it for a minute. What do you think you're doing coming here dressed like that? You're going to come to my son's wedding dressed like that. And then there's just no end of servants in this story. He says to another servant, take that one and bind him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness where he can wail and grind his teeth. Matthew is big on grinding teeth. There's lots of Matthew stories that end with somebody wailing and grinding their teeth. What is that all about? Part of what's going on in the story is for a section of it now, it's been pretty clear who's the bad guys and who's the good guys in this story. There keeps being these conflicts with the leadership, especially the temple authorities. And it's clear there's all these stories where some prostitute asks for forgiveness or some leper gets healed or stuff like that. And yay for our side, because we're the good guys in the story. And we're finally seeing those bad, powerful people get their comeuppance. And just about the time you think it's safe to think that I have paid because I'm one of the good guys. How did you get in here dressed like that? The thing is, the Hebrews, even St. Paul, who was the second reading tonight, they had this thing about clothing. And they used it as a metaphor, kind of an analog about wearing on the outside of people, what are really inner traits of character. St. Paul has a place where he speaks, he uses the analogy of imagining a Roman soldier getting dressed in the morning, and his uniform has about six different pieces to it. Sandals and a breastplate and a helmet and other things. And he attaches different virtues to each of the pieces of the uniform. He says, put on the breastplate of righteousness and the helmet of salvation. Put on the sandals of some other virtue. So you're putting on your robe in essentially what are essentially really good virtuous habits. The problem with the guy in the story was he wasn't expecting to be invited to a wedding that day. It came as a shock and as a surprise. And that's the kicker in the story. Is that even if you're among the ones that have already understood that they're invited, just showing up isn't enough. Just showing up isn't enough. Back when I was, before I came to Stanford, I was at Arizona State University, the Newman Center, and the Catholic Campus Ministry for 12 years. One of the differences between Stanford and Arizona State is a whole lot of people there. I mean, it isn't true that if you get accepted, you're an undergrad, that the university works with you to make sure the finances come out of pay. And for most of you that are doing graduate work, it seems like you have assistantships or lab jobs or things that there's typically graduating out of here with a pile of that. Isn't that true? Well, I think, I don't know what you spent your money on, but what I know is that Arizona State, lots and lots of people were accumulating more and more debt. And there used to be, when I started in campus ministry 22 years ago, there used to be a lot of very low interest in college loans. And that's changed over the last 15 or 20 years. And now, student loans are the closest to that would be once in a while I'd meet a couple who had met the love of their life and were ready to marry. But you hear them say, or overhear them say, we'd love to be married, Father, but we can't afford it. I'd say, are you talking about the wedding? What marriage? I can't help you with your rent, and I can't make your car payment. But if you're talking about a wedding, I can help you. What I found is people had an idea that weddings are really expensive and we can't afford one of those. And I challenged them and said, would you really not marry the love of your life because you can't afford an expensive party? Is that what you're telling me? And what I found was in that particular community, there had been a bunch of people who met their spouse there 25 years earlier and had stayed on in the area, stayed a member in the congregation, raised their kids in the congregation, and still kind of hung around as part of the community members. Was to ask one of them. There was about six different couples like that, and all I had to do was ask one of them, could you make a few phone calls? Because I think I have a wedding that we need to throw. Those couples would get on the phone, and they'd get to work, and they'd put together a whole portfolio of a wedding reception for somebody they didn't even know. Some student going to the wedding center. Somebody would take care of the cake. And somebody else was doing the flowers. Others were planning on turning our reception hall into something beautiful. They could all busy with the invitations and different things. We even had one that was this couple had their wedding at our daily mass, like on a Thursday. And I told the people on Wednesday, the little group of 30 people who comes to daily mass, tomorrow you're coming to a wedding. And I gave them the couple's name. And darn it, they didn't all go out and buy cards and gifts. And they had stuff for somebody they didn't even know because they were at their wedding. It's lovely. Every time I saw one of those, it warmed my heart. It warmed everybody else's heart. So back to the first reading, that one with all the juicy meats and the fine aged wines. What do you think it's going to be like with whatever this eternal banquet is like? If there is such a thing in the afterlife, do you think you're just going to walk in and all the work's been done? Lots of wedding receptions are kind of like that. When the couple finally gets there, you've eaten all the carrot sticks and all the celery. You've had enough to drink already. And then the couple arrives and then you get to go in. And then somebody serves you the meal. Not going to be able to afford that because you can't take it with you. You're not going to be able to write a check to the caterer. Nobody is, whether you were rich or poor in this life. Nobody's just going to be able to snap their fingers and produce a feast. What I think the eternal feast is going to be is an enormous potluck. A potluck celebration. To the way that everybody had a part in creating. You can do something that you can do. And if you wanted to spend your love on contributing to this whole thing, you'd be jumping forward to say, here's what I can do. And before long, it's a feast that's not just all about wine and juicy meat, but about how spectacular this is to be a part of something that everybody helped create. That's so different from just showing up and standing there. So I think what the story gets to the very end is, are you just showing up? And the corollary to it is, what is it that's really important that you're too busy to do? This is a really busy place, isn't it? That's why the question is all about important. What is it that you that's really, really important that you're too busy to do? Only that.
edition of Catholic Cardinal Reflections has been sponsored by Antodo 2, The Wizard of Oz as a Spiritual Adventure, by our Pastor Director, Father Nathan Castle, OP. For more information, please go to wizardofozspiritualadventure.myevent.com. Thank you for listening to the Catholic Cardinal Reflections from the Catholic community at Stanford University. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu. We invite you to visit our offices at the third floor of Old Union at the Center for Interreligious Community, Learning, and Experiences, or mail us at the Catholic Community at Stanford, P.O. Box 20301, Stanford, California 94309. For Father Isaiah Mary Milano, OP, this is Nancy Pham. Till next time, may God bless you.